This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. For women, it may seem like issues like fatigue, lethargy, and weight fluctuations are par for the course or simply just something you expect as you get older. However, these symptoms may also mask thyroid problems, and such conditions may go undiagnosed because of the unspecific nature of their symptoms. So today, I'm speaking to Dr. Shamita Sharma, consultant endocrinologist from Subang Jaya Medical Center, to find out more about how thyroid problems affect women specifically and how you can identify whether you are at risk. How are you today, Dr. Shamita?
I'm fine, thank you. Good afternoon.
Can we start first by understanding the thyroid gland? What exactly is it and what are the functions that it carries out?
Sure. So your thyroid gland is an endocrine gland. And an endocrine gland is something that produces hormones which carry out specific functions in the body. So your thyroid gland basically produces thyroid hormones, thyroxine and T3. And these hormones are responsible for your growth and development and metabolism, weight management, bone maintenance, heart rate, temperature regulation, really a host of functions. And it's very important, particularly important in growth and neurological development in the child, so much so that in newborns we screen them for an underactive thyroid, because if they do have that and it's not treated, there can be permanent growth and neurological retardation as the child develops. So that's how important your thyroid is. And for adults, of course, it carries out all those other functions I mentioned earlier.
Okay. And what could cause problems with the thyroid gland that would disrupt those functions?
Okay, well, your thyroid gland, basically it sits in your neck, and it can present really with very subtle symptoms, or it can present with a neck swelling. And the common conditions are, of course, either an overactive or an underactive thyroid. So these two problems basically make up the bulk of thyroid disorders that we see. So an underactive thyroid, we call it hypothyroidism, and an overactive thyroid is called hyperthyroidism. And then apart from that, you can sometimes have just a lump in the thyroid, which is a thyroid nodule, or an enlargement, generalized enlargement, or you might even have thyroid cancer, which is, of course, less common than the other conditions.
All right. And what would lead the gland to be either overactive or underactive?
Well, let's take them one by one. So we start with hyperthyroidism, which is an overactive thyroid gland. The most common cause is autoimmune disease or Graves' disease, and it's usually present in younger women, women in their 20s, 30s, and so on. And hyperthyroidism, how it presents is it's usually with weight loss, palpitations, heat intolerance, sometimes, you know, diarrhea, insomnia, and menstrual disturbances. So that's the most common cause, which is autoimmune in origin, which is basically, it tends to be familial, and it's because of antibodies in the system that attack your own antibodies that are attacking the thyroid gland. And the other common cause is of hyperthyroidism is your multinodular goiter, which tends to happen in older women. And this also causes an overactive thyroid, but it's not really familial in nature. And then coming to hypothyroidism, again, the most common cause is autoimmune, which is, again, antibodies causing destruction of your thyroid gland and leading to underactivity of the gland. That is by far the most common cause. Other causes are, for example, previous radiation or injury or surgery to the neck or radioiodine therapy.
How prevalent are thyroid problems in Malaysia overall?
Well, there was a large study done a few years ago that showed that overall hypo and hyperthyroidism in combination, it's about 5%. Of the population. And then, of course, you also have thyroid nodules and thyroid swellings, which are about 3-4%.
Okay.
And if you break it down between hypo and hyperthyroidism, our numbers suggest that hyperthyroidism is about 3% and hypothyroidism about 2%. But worldwide, the hypo numbers seem to be slightly more than hyper numbers.
All right. Are there environmental factors that would explain the prevalence?
Yes, there could be, because what we found, especially for hypothyroidism, is that in areas of iodine deficiency, for example, rural or inland areas, it tends to be more common. We found that this same study found, I think, 9-10% rates of enlarged goiter or thyroid enlargement in Kelantan and some of the sort of inland areas. So yes, certainly environment does play a role, and also if you've had perhaps radiation, exposure to radiation can be a factor as well for cancer.
Mm-hmm. And so as I said at the beginning of the show as well, we want to look at thyroid problems among women, and they are actually more common in women compared to men. Can you explain a little bit more about this?
Okay, so let's talk about autoimmune conditions. We know actually that autoimmunity in general is more prevalent in women. So any autoimmune condition, whether it's rheumatoid arthritis or lupus or autoimmune thyroid disease, it just tends to occur more in women, with higher prevalence in women, for whatever reason. And then, but if you also look at, and that this in formulation figures, I think, suggest that the ratio is about 2-1. But if you also look at thyroid cancer, we've also found the same thing, something similar, in the sense that women do tend to get, the prevalence is higher in women compared to that in men. I think that we're not really sure why that is, but there is a theory that sex hormones may play a role, although we haven't really got good evidence for that yet.
Mm-hmm.
And also possibly, you know, the pickup rate in women may be better, because women sometimes present earlier if they've got a lump in the neck, or they enter the healthcare system earlier because of pregnancy and so on. So mm-hmm. perhaps the pickup rate. So there are many reasons why we see more thyroid disease in women. Familial is a large part of it, certainly, autoimmunity that is. But also there may be sex hormone factors at work and behavioural factors at work as well.
Mm. I also read that 5 to 9% of women develop thyroid illness after giving birth. What exactly is happening there? And if you could update me on those statistics as well.
Sure. Yeah, so up to 10% of women will develop postpartum thyroiditis. And what this is thyroid disease that occurs within a few months after delivery. It usually presents initially with symptoms of an overactive thyroid. So, of course, so if you're feeling, you know, irritable and you're not sleeping very well and so on, you know, it may not just be because of the baby, it could be your thyroid.
I see.
And what happens is because there's autoimmune destruction of the gland initially. Mm-hmm. So it's an autoimmune etiology as well. So there's autoimmune destruction of the gland initially, and there's leakage of the thyroxine hormones, the thyroid hormones, into your bloodstream. And this causes features of thyroid overactivity. But this usually eventually settles down as the autoimmune destruction kind of abates. And what can happen subsequently, some months later, is either the thyroid recovers and goes back to normal, or it can become underactive instead if there's some permanent damage from that autoimmune destruction. So really you go through, you know, a few different types of thyroid disorder within that 12 months postpartum. You can see quite a wide spectrum of symptoms.
On top of everything else that women are going through after
yes,
birth.
Absolutely.
Oh, gosh. In terms of risk factors, and of course, if it is autoimmune in origin, the family history would probably be a major risk factor, right?
It is a big risk factor. I think we found that, like patients with autoimmune thyroid disease, we have found that about one-third of them will have a first-degree relative who also have autoimmune thyroid disease.
And would that be the same for thyroid cancer as well?
No, it's not so much familiar, except perhaps, well, there are different types of thyroid cancer. In the medullary thyroid cancer, has some genetic factors at play, but not really the other thyroid cancers, which are papillary and follicular and so on.
All right. Let's go for a quick break. And when we come back, let's look further at sort of distinguishing between symptoms of thyroid problems and how do you confirm for sure that what you're dealing with is either, if you're talking about the most common issues, overactive or underactive thyroid problems, and treatment options for women. So I'm speaking to Dr. Shamita Sharma, consultant endocrinologist from Subang Jaya Medical Center, and we are discussing thyroid problems among women on Health and Living today. So stay tuned, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shao-Ik. On the line with me today is Dr. Shamita Sharma, a consultant endocrinologist from Subang Jaya Medical Center. We're discussing thyroid problems in women today. And the thyroid is an endocrine gland that's located in the neck. I think many of us are aware of that sort of very basic understanding. And what the thyroid gland does is that it produces hormones, thyroid hormones that are responsible for many key functions in the body, including growth and development for children, as well as throughout our lives. Functions like metabolism, weight management, temperature regulation, among many others. And I think what we want to do today is talk about thyroid problems among women, because it is more commonly seen among women compared to men. And we want to focus on the common presentations of either the overactive or the underactive thyroid. The overactive thyroid would lead to hyperthyroidism, whereas the underactive gland would lead to hypothyroidism. So symptoms, Dr. Shamita, I think you've mentioned things like weight loss, insomnia, that's for hyperthyroidism. For hypothyroidism, it's related to things like fatigue, tiredness. These are very, perhaps you could run through a refresher on sure. the symptoms, but also these are very general symptoms that women especially can attribute to many other causes as well. So how do you distinguish them and make sure that you're really looking at the right issues?
Absolutely. So for hyperthyroidism, first of all, there very often can be or might be a neck swelling. Sometimes there is bulging of the eyes as well, which is exophthalmos. But that's only in patients who have Graves' disease. Mm-hmm. And then patients typically, they present to me with weight loss, palpitations, sometimes tremors, change in bowel habits, usually diarrhea, and difficulty sleeping, some irritability. And you're right, some of these symptoms are rather vague and, you know, present in the general population who don't even have thyroid disease. But I think the more specific ones would be for hyperthyroidism, for example, if there's a neck swelling, or there are eye changes, or if you've got palpitations, if you hold your hand out, then it seems to be trembling when you try to hold it still. Mm-hmm. These are somewhat more specific for hyperthyroidism compared mm-hmm. to, say, the lethargy and the insomnia and the irritability and so on. So that might be helpful in distinguishing it. For hypothyroidism, again, you may have a neck swelling. It's a bit difficult. Some of the other symptoms can be difficult because, you know, you get lethargy and weight gain and so on. And, you know, if I talk to anybody in my age group or professional circle, everybody's tired and gaining weight.
But, especially after COVID.
Yes, exactly. But I suppose for this, again, the neck swelling would be a more specific sort of sign. And if there's family history, or if you have facial puffiness, and if you have a lower sort of heart rate, and if you have cold intolerance, which it's kind of the flip side of hyperthyroidism, where, you know, you get weight loss and you get a higher heart rate causing palpitations, and you get heat intolerance. So hypothyroidism gives you the opposite of all of these.
All right. So when you say cold intolerance, meaning you mm-hmm. feel cold easier?
Yes, you feel cold more easily than perhaps compared to others, or perhaps compared to previously, how you used to feel previously.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do thyroid problems among women tend to be underdiagnosed if women may brush them off as just, well, this is just normal?
Honestly, I'm not sure, but I think globally, there is an issue of underdiagnosis in general with women in disadvantaged communities. And I'm not just talking about thyroid disease, but just generally, because if in disadvantaged areas, women tend to have less access to resources, whether it's medical or other resources. So there can be underdiagnosis. In Malaysia, I'm not really sure what our figures say, but in developed countries, it does. They do think that one of the reasons thyroid disease is found with a greater prevalence in women. I mean, there are other causes, of course, but one of the reasons is that women present earlier. They tend to attend medical evaluations or checkups more readily, or they, you know, because of reproduction, they are in the healthcare system more often than men. Mm-hmm. Or they come in complaining of a thyroid lump earlier than, you know, the man who will just ignore it. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure, but I think in developed countries, the pickup rate may actually be a bit higher than it is for men.
All right. So how would you confirm a thyroid problem?
So you have to begin, of course, with a very thorough history to your endocrinologist or your general physician and an examination. And then based on that, so you have future, if you have a neck swelling, your evaluation may or may not include a scan. But a simple blood test is the best test to detect either overfunctioning or underfunctioning of your thyroid gland. And based on that, then you can talk about treatment options.
All right. So should every woman with these symptoms get a blood test to look for potential thyroid problems, do you think?
Yes, definitely. If you have these symptoms, for sure, you should get you should get a blood test, for sure. And if you're planning pregnancy as well, there are some arguments being made for what we call universal screening in pregnancy. That means even if you don't have symptoms, the recommendation is if you're in an environment where resources are ample and there's access to medical treatment, you should universally screen pregnant patients for thyroid disease at the beginning of pregnancy or at the moment of diagnosing pregnancy.
And the purpose for universally screening pregnant women?
Well, I think generally we make an argument for universal screening when a disease is common enough and when a screening test is readily available in a simple form, mm-hmm. when there's treatment readily available, and when not treating this condition in pregnancy would lead to adverse outcome. So it's been argued that certainly the hypo and hyperthyroidism thyroid disease in general in pregnancy, it does fulfill all these criteria for universal screening. But again, the recommendation is that you look at your resources locally and then decide whether you want to pursue a program of universal screening or very targeted screening in patients who have family history or who have symptoms or signs that are suspicious of thyroid pregnancy.
Mm. And so coming to treatment options, how would you treat each of these thyroid problems in women?
Now, very quickly, for hyperthyroidism, it's usually pills. And if after a year or so of treatment, we might consider radioiodine. In hypothyroidism, it's really very simple. You just have to swallow some thyroxine every day. And once your thyroid function is normalized, really, you can just see your doctor a few times a year, and that's it. For thyroid nodules, you have to get, there are two things. When there's a thyroid swelling or a thyroid nodules, there are two things we want to know. Number one, is there disruption of the thyroid hormone? Is it overactivity or underactivity? Secondly, what is the nature of the swelling? So certainly you would get a scan. And if the scan suggested any suspicious features, then I would send my patient to the surgeon for what we call a fine needle aspiration cytology or a sampling of that lump to see what it is, whether it's benign or not.
Or whether it could potentially be cancerous.
Yes, it's potentially malignant, yes.
Okay. And when it comes to the medications, are there any side effects? That's usually the biggest concern for patients.
For thyroxine, honestly, no, not really. For things like that, for your treatment of hyperthyroidism, whether you use carbidazole or whether you use PTU, there are risk of allergies sometimes. And then certainly when it comes to pregnancy, we have to amend or modify the treatment. That's about all. There's a very rare risk of depression of your white cell count. That's about 0.1%, 1 in 1,000. It's very low.
Do thyroid problems affect reproductive health and a woman's ability to conceive?
Yes, they can. They absolutely can. So both hypo and hyperthyroidism can cause disturbances in menstruation and can cause disturbances in fertility. Sometimes the patient may even be having normal menses but may still be having subfertility. And treatment of this in the absence of other causes of fertility, of subfertility or infertility, if you treat thyroid condition, usually that will restore fertility.
Okay. And if a woman is undergoing treatment while she's pregnant, would there be any complications?
Usually we would have to in the case of thyroxine, when you're hypothyroid, your requirements for thyroxine are higher in pregnancy. So if you're planning to get pregnant and you're on thyroxine, you need to see your physician in advance and plan to step up the thyroxine as soon as you're pregnant. That's the first thing. And secondly, for hypothyroid treatment as well, it depends on what you're taking. So we may need to switch over to something that's more friendly to pregnancy mm-hmm. and do more close monitoring of the thyroid gland during the pregnancy as well.
Would the thyroid issues have any effect on the unborn baby?
Untreated, yes. So untreated hypo and hyperthyroidism can lead to adverse pregnancy outcomes, such as miscarriages, preterm labor, even reduced fetal IQ in hypothyroidism, increased fetal heart rate in hyperthyroidism, things like thyroid storm, quite a number of problems actually. So you do not want to go into your pregnancy with an untreated thyroid disorder for sure.
But typically thyroid problems would be picked up in your routine pregnancy checkups, right?
I don't know if our obstetricians are running routine thyroid function tests. As an endocrinologist, I certainly do. The minute any of my patients falls pregnant or the minute a pregnant patient presents, mm-hmm. that thyroid function test is one of the things I would order. But I can't speak for what the overall practice is among obstetricians.
I see. All right. And looking beyond just women who are thinking of conceiving who are pregnant, what are other complications that women will face if they leave their thyroid problems untreated?
Well, as I mentioned, there may be difficulty with conceiving in the first place. Mm-hmm. And certainly you may have a stormy pregnancy, or you may have fetal loss or miscarriage, or it can be preterm labor. So all these are problems that are avoidable. And treatable, can be avoided if the thyroid condition is treated in advance.
All right. And what about, women beyond the reproductive age who are facing thyroid issues? So, for instance, the older women who have multinodular goiters, for instance, what happens when that condition is not treated?
Well, pretty much the same thing, in the sense that if your hyperthyroidism is untreated, then you might suffer complications. But in older women, one of the complications that is significant is bone loss. So you might become osteopenic or osteoporotic with years and years of untreated hyperthyroidism in the postmenopausal period. That's particularly important. And then, of course, in older women, there is an increased risk of what we call atrial fibrillation. In the elderly, this is more common in general. And untreated hyperthyroidism can trigger that earlier or more frequently.
I see. All right. How do issues like menopause come into play and sort of perhaps muddy the waters when it comes to getting a clear picture of women's thyroid problems? Because, again, many of the symptoms could be attributed to going through menopause or perimenopause, right? Do you feel that it's more of a challenge to identify thyroid problems in women of that age group?
I guess it could be, because if you're having hot flashes, you might think you're not sure whether it's the menopause or whether it's the hyperthyroidism. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I guess a careful evaluation and examination and then a simple blood test will clear that up right away.
All
right. So then if the thyroid function test is perfectly normal, then you have to treat the menopausal symptoms, which are distinct from the thyroid disease. They don't really overlap.
All right. Apart from obviously getting it treated appropriately, do you have any advice for women on how they can manage their symptoms if they are living with thyroid problems?
Well, if you're taking thyroxine, it's very important that you take it properly. So it's very sensitive to interference and absorption. So we always tell our patients to take the thyroxine 1 hour first thing in the morning, 1 hour before breakfast. And this is to ensure sort of optimal absorption. If you tend to take it at no particular time of the day, you'll find the absorption is very erratic and the effects will be suboptimal, and you may not feel, so good on days when, you're not taking it properly. Apart from that, well, I guess, keeping fit in general and maintaining a healthy weight and eating well and not taking, funny pills which your neighbor recommends, which are good for your hormones, things like that. Sometimes these pills contain a host of hormones or a whole lot of iodine, which can turn your thyroid into, further dysfunction.
Mm.
So yeah, don't do that.
Yeah,
for sure.
And speaking of, those kinds of beliefs, what are some common misconceptions or myths that people have, that women tend to have about thyroid problems, that perhaps you'd be able to clear up for us?
Well, I guess some of them think that they can take supplements or they can just take large amounts of iodine and it'll help. But honestly, taking iodine can have a very unpredictable effect on your thyroid gland. So you can either push it into overactivity, or actually suppress it into underactivity, and we cannot predict which way it's going to go. So it's really not recommended that you self-medicate with iodine for any thyroid condition at all.
All right. Eating iodine-rich foods?
No, it doesn't really seem to make much of a difference. You probably have to consume a lot of iodine-rich food in huge amounts to have a clinical effect on the thyroid gland. Mm. And it'd probably be one, again, that would be unpredictable. Like I said, when you take too much iodine, we don't know whether it's going to cause overactivity or underactivity.
Mm. What can women do to reduce their risk of developing thyroid problems, if at all?
Well, for thyroid cancers, I guess try to avoid radiation to the head and neck, and don't take, very iodine-rich supplements to avoid disruptions to your hormone activity. And well, lastly, I guess choose your family carefully because so much of autoimmune thyroid disease is genetic. But that's about all, really.
And would you have a final message for us today?
Well, I guess I would say don't underrate your thyroid. It's quite the powerhouse. And if you do have concerns, speak to your physician because the symptoms can be quite subtle. But for the most part, thyroid disorders are highly treatable.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Shamita. I've been speaking to Dr. Shamita Sharma, consultant endocrinologist from Subang Jaya Medical Center. We've been discussing thyroid problems among women. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.